One of the pleasures of being a radio host is the chance to speak with authors, and particularly authors from a person's own state. And I've had that chance many times on this program, and on a few occasions I've had the chance to talk with our next guest, author Jane Hamilton of southeastern Wisconsin. She's the author of, oh my goodness, lots of books. The Book of Ruth won the Penn Hemingway Award for the first fiction, Map of the World, a New York Times Notable Book of the Year. Both of those books have been selections of Oprah's Book Club, and her last novel, which I enjoyed very much, and we had a chance to talk about it on the show, When Madeline Was Young, that was a Washington Post Best Book of the Year. Her newest novel is called Laura Ryder's Masterpiece, and it's from Grand Central Publishing, and it's a different kind of book from what she's written in the past. And so that's one of the reasons I'm really happy to have a chance to talk with her about it. It's kind of a dark book in a way, but it's a really funny book, too, about American marriages. It involves a public radio host, which is all... which is great, and I really had some chuckles as she spoke about life at public radio land, and so I'm glad to have her back to ask her some questions, and certainly to invite you to join in, too, with your questions or comments. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, and otherwise you can email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. Jane Hamilton with us by phone. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Larry.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. It's always a delight to talk to you.
Well, you are about ready to take off on a big countrywide tour.
Well, yeah, I guess it is
sort of big,
although nothing's quite like it was in the old days, of course.
Things have changed a lot. So, you know, when you think about the Book of Ruth, is that 20 years ago now?
Yes.
The publishing industry has undergone quite a bit of change in that time.
It is true. It is true. I have a friend who raffles off, you know, bath salts for anybody who pre-orders her new book. These are desperate, desperate times.
Well, what is it? Are people not reading anymore? They're just not buying, or what?
I think that there are readers, certainly. I taught last year at Carleton College in Northfield, Minnesota, and I was amazed at all the serious young people who were real readers. So there's certainly pockets of readers. I'm not sure in this economy if people are going to be book buyers, but you know, as depressing as sometimes the world feels, I do believe that people will keep reading novels.
You know, I read probably somewhere between 50 and probably 75 novels a year.
You do?
I read at least one a week.
Oh, my goodness.
And so it's hard for me to imagine, really, a world without books.
Do you do
read.
This because you are compelled to because of your job, or because you just do?
Well, I actually, that's one of the fun parts of the job for me, is to read the books. You know, of course, I read your book. You're on this week, but I'm also reading another book, and that has nothing to do with the show. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of a mix.
Mm-hmm. The writer William Maxwell said that what he would miss most about life when he was dead is reading novels, and dinner and reading novels are two, you know, high points.
Well, I have to agree with you on that. Well, this book is certainly a lot different from any of the other books of yours that I've read.
Well, it does have a plot. That was really fun to write a book with a plot. But, you know, I sort of maintain that in the other books there's funny bits as well. This book is certainly, I think, to me, it amused me in the, you know, ha-ha department more than the other books. But I think the plot is the main thing, that, you know, it's short, it's just a little puff, it's satirical, and it did amuse me.
Well, it certainly amused me, too. Well, tell us, give our listeners sort of an outline of the plot.
Well, the book is about a woman named Laura Ryder, and she's never been much of a reader, but she has this acute sort of crush and fascination, of, as we all do with our local public radio hosts, as I'm sure you can relate. You can relate to that, Larry.
Yep.
Just adulation and worship all around. And so she decides that she wants to write a romance novel, and because she hasn't really been much of a reader, she doesn't know how writing a book works. And so she sets up her husband with the local public radio host, whose name is Jenna Feroli, and which, of course, I meant really to be Jim Fleming. And she sort of catapults them via email into having a real true love affair. She doesn't really think it out, but the two of them do have an affair, and she manipulates the thing, and so that she can figure out how a plot for a romance novel works, and then, you know, one thing leads to the next, and various people get into various trouble as a result. But, you know, I was catapulted to write this book myself because I had been teaching writing on a cruise ship, which you can imagine was colorful.
Yeah.
And I've been very lucky through the years when I've taught to have really terrific students. And this population was, however, in a different category than the usual fare. And I was amazed by these people because they were lovely, and they were interesting because they really wanted not so much to write. I mean, they realized that was part of it, but they really wanted to be published. And so, and they were very earnest in that wish. And so I came home from the cruise kind of wanting to kill myself. But and I thought, what kind of person is this who has this fierce desire to sort of have the trappings of being a writer without really doing the work of it? And in fact, some of these people seem to be unaware that there has been a print culture for the last several centuries, and so that's really what was what led me into this into Laura, the character of Laura Ryder.
And you were working on something else and just sort of dropped that, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I did work on a book for 4 years, which I had to put away, which was the happiest day of my life. But this book, I don't know. You know, maybe there's some kind of cosmic calibration in that horrible book that didn't work, that caused me so much pain, was then I had a little reward with this one that sort of came out on one single whole breath. But, and you know, maybe that's the magic of writing about public radio.
Well, I must say, have you talked to Jean about this book at all, Faraka?
Well, no, I have not. I don't really know Jean.
No.
Well, and I certainly wasn't thinking about her when I wrote the book, but I do love the way the name Jenna Feroli kind of trips off the tongue.
Yeah, it does.
You will realize, Larry, that Laura Ryder's masterpiece, Larry Mueller. So you see, every name is a code for a Wisconsin public radio host.
Well, I when you described your host's Jenna's on-air interview style, and when you mentioned that in Laura's mind that Laura could feel through the voice, her voice, that she was leaning toward the microphone, I thought, you know, that sounds just like Jean Faraka to me.
You know, when I was coming up, I used to listen to Margaret Andreasen. I don't know if she's still on.
No, she's not.
No, but
she's
she was
retired.
I loved her voice, and I felt that kind of swoony feeling when I was listening to her.
She will be glad to know that. I see her from time.
Was lovely.
Very from time to time, and she had that. She had that about her too.
Mm-hmm.
When she leaned in. Well, I thought you must have. Well, you've spent a fair amount of time at public radio stations, although you and I always talk by phone.
We do. We do. We would probably be shocked to see each other in the flesh.
Oh, my goodness. Jane Hamilton, our guest today, author of many books, and the latest one we're talking about today is Laura Ryder's Masterpiece, and it's published by Grand Central. And if you would like to join in with a question or comment, we hope you do. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us, and that address is talk@wpr.org. We were first going to have you on for a part of Garden Talk because neither one of us had read the book yet.
Well, you know, that would have worked out well because Laura Ryder, who has a garden center, is invited on the Jenna Ferroli Show to speak about gardening. So I thought that would have been quite thematic.
I know.
But, you know, you do this all the time, and I wonder, do you get a little case of nerves right before the on-air sign comes on?
Once in a while, not very often anymore. I mean, I'm looking forward to being on the air.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more, it's not so much a case of the nerves as it is anticipating the fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of how I... That's how I look at
things.
Well,
that sounds ideal.
It feels right for me anyway. And I guess I was off the air for a while and then had to come back on. And I think the first day back on the air after the time off, I had a little case of the nerves. But for the most part, it's just kind of fun, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, especially, I would imagine, if you're prepared.
that's one of the things. I always read the books. And if I have an author on, I read the book.
You might not be amazed to know how kind of unusual that is. But I remember once being on a morning news show in California, and it was for my tour of A Map of the World. And the anchor man, I don't think had even cracked the cover, and it was right after O.J. had done his deed. And he held the book up, and he said, "This book is about a tragedy, and O.J. is about a tragedy, too, so let's talk about him." That was a low point.
Oh, my goodness, Jane. Well, I tell you what, Laura in Green Bay's on board here with a question or comment, so let's go to Laura. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I'm just delighted to hear Jane Hamilton's voice. She has such a great spirit and sense of humor. My daughter actually met her while she was visiting Lawrence University, and I was really annoyed that she didn't tell me she was coming, but I think I was working at the time. And I love the Book of Ruth, and I was wondering if she created her characters first, or she had a plot in mind before she writes.
Well, every book is different. I don't really think in plots. I would love to be able to really think in plots each time. But most often, the characters come first, and their piece of trouble. And with the character comes the setting and the place, hand in hand. And the voice is pretty is with me too. And I also know the last line. So that the writing of the book is a journey to that last line, although occasionally the last line will change. But for me, the middle of a novel is like a long, hot afternoon. How are you going to fill it? And so, I write the beginning of the book many, many times, many drafts, because I think the beginning has to be very sound, and then I go farther into the novel with each draft, and then arrive at the end, and then have to go through the beginning again to sort of make it cue up with the ending. So I write a lot of drafts, but I would say that the characters really, you know, my books, I mean, even this one is, although there's a plot, they're all character-driven rather than plot-driven.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Laura. Appreciate that call. And we've got Kathleen coming up, but let me first remind you that Jane Hamilton, our guest today, is the author of many books, including Laura Ryder's Masterpiece. And we're talking about that book and her other books, too, and about writing and the creative process. There are some interesting things in the book about one of her the characters in her book's comments about the about the writing, the creative process that we might explore with her as well. Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Visiting with Jane Hamilton about her book, her latest book, Laura Ryder's Masterpiece, and about writing. Really happy to have her back again today to be with us. And we have every line filled, Jane. So let's go to the phones again. And now, Kathleen in Winchester, we give you a chance. Thanks for calling. Hi. Kathleen, are you there? Oh, wait a minute. Now let's try it. Kathleen, are you there?
Oh, yeah. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Well, thank you so much.
You bet.
I love your books, Jane, and I have your newest book at home. I've got it from the library. I can't wait to start reading it. But I was wondering, I wanted to hear more about what happened with the book you said that you were writing and that you had to stop writing. I think that sounds so interesting that you would spend so much time on it. And do you think that you'll pick it back up and try and finish it? Or what was going on with that process?
Kathleen, you took that question right out of my mouth. What about it, Jane?
Process, because I spent 4 years on a book that I basically knew was going to be dead on arrival. And, you know, I don't know if you're a writer, but I think all of us, when we're working on the thing at hand, have days where our heart sinks and we think it's terrible. But this was just 4 years, every day sitting there and having the heart sinking deeper. And it was after 9/11, and I think for many of us too, it was hard to write the things that we'd been writing about, you know, American dysfunctional families and characters who are novel-gazing. The conversation had broadened and changed, and I felt like I should be writing about something different. And so the thing that I was working on just seemed frivolous, and yet I really did not know what to do with myself. I researched online nursing programs. But you know that I would have to take prerequisites? I would have to learn how to solve for X. I don't really know how to do that. So that was kind of daunting. The thing that I finally decided to do was make it the best failure that I could. And so the sentences are, you know, they flow nicely, but there's for some reason, which I just kind of explained, I wasn't deeply interested in the characters, and I couldn't make them psychologically deep. And the day that I packed it away was really such a happy day, and I felt like I'd been liberated from a very bad marriage. And just to keep that metaphor rolling along, I couldn't really leave that book until there was a new man in the wings, and I finally had another idea, which I was excited by. But it took me 4 years to. It was just a long dry period, and with all the books that I've written, each one leads to the next, and so I had the sense that if I just kept writing, the next one would come to me. But it was really no fun.
No, 4 years.
And I haven't looked at it since I packed it away. I don't think there's I don't think there's really much of anything there that I could reuse. I used to think when I was younger that everything was useful, you know, that even if you sort of cut out a sentence, you could use it in another place. But as I get older, I think that some things just really are not recyclable.
Well, you know, 40 years from now, perhaps.
No. Now, my goal in life is to have about 5 days before my death date so I can burn everything.
All right. Thanks, Kathleen. Say, by the way, Lou wonders if, this is on an email, if you've ever thought about writing about your thrilling February tropical vacations.
Lou goes to Sanibel Island in February, and he's our neighbor in our the little shacks we stay in. And so, yes, Lou, one of these days you're going to be my you are my hero already. So that'll be an easy one to write.
All right, Wolf in Green Bay, we're on to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, hey, Larry. I've been a writer for a long time, and I'm still fighting to get published and everything like that. My father taught me one very important aspect of writing was to write 10 pages, but throw away 9.
Whoa.
And I was wondering what the Jane's like editing process is like when
That sounds kind of draconian to me, because sometimes you're on a roll and the 10 pages are all good. So you be careful about that. But I think certainly, you know, when you're writing and you're in that flush of love with your own prose and you think it's going very well, it certainly behooves you the next day to take a look and to prepare yourself for the fact that you might feel not quite as gratified as you did the day before. But, you know, I write drafts and drafts, and I think for me the most important thing is taking time with it, which is difficult in our era when, you know, we want gratification right away. And also I think there's more of an urgency now to feel that you're sort of hooked into the current and you're writing something that's topical and that's of the moment, which of course is an impossible thing to predict, and writing is such a slow process that what's of the moment now is not going to be of the moment when the thing is actually published. So those are dangers, you know, to avoid. But I read my work out loud to myself. Not in a whisper, I read it in my full voice, which can feel like a strange thing to do when you're living with others. But I also, since the advent of the iPod, I read my work into my iPod, and then I listen to it when I'm driving. And I read my work at a certain point when I really can do no more. I read it out loud to my husband, and he has a great ear. I think it's important not necessarily to have 10 people who are your trusted readers, but one or two. So all of those things are part of my process, and I really enjoy writing, actually, and I one of the reasons I like to read my work out loud is that I think it's important if you're writing to take pleasure in your own prose and to listen to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really why we do it.
Well, I think reading out loud too, if there are sometimes sentences that, as you read the sentence to yourself, it sounds great and perfectly fine. But when you read it out loud, I would have to bet that there are times when you read a sentence out loud, you say to yourself, "That doesn't sound right."
Yes, the ear is wiser, I think, than the eye sometimes.
Yeah.
Do you do much workshopping, actually?
Now and again, not. Now and again, opportunities arise, not as a regular thing, but it's always fun to see what people are cooking up.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Good luck. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's turn to Jennifer in Madison next. Jennifer, hi.
Hi, good morning. My question is about integrating writing into daily life. I'm not a writer as a profession, but I do enjoy it.
Uh-huh.
And I have two small children uh-huh. and a family and a house and, you know, all those sorts of things. And I find that when I write, I like to do it, like, sort of obsessively and as a continuous stream. And it's
yes.
hard for me to sort of go in and out of that.
Yes.
And so my question for you is, I'd like to write more, but I'm trying to come up with some kind of way of, you know, sort of hefting the different things that are going on. Do you have any thoughts on that? Like, I don't, you know, I'm not familiar with, you know, where you're at and the sort of with your, you know, children and all that. But how do you balance those things? Or how do you, I mean, besides the, you know, sleep deprivation option, which doesn't mm-hmm. work so well for me.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you had thoughts on that.
Well, yes, I've had thoughts about it for, you know, since I was, had small children, which now they're all grown up. But Grace Paley, the writer Grace Paley, said something very comforting along the way, which is, there is no balance. Oh, that's right. Why even strain for it? But, you know, I think it's very difficult, and I now have deep regret that I was such a maniac when my children were little. I was so frustrated because I really didn't have time or space to do this thing that felt very urgent to me. And, you know, I eked out time. I worked when my kids were napping, and but I too, you know, I need sleep. So the sleep deprivation, you know, you can't really write well when you're exhausted. You really need all your neurons to be firing. So one thing that I would do over if I could is that I had a couple hours every other afternoon of daycare, and I think now it would have been better just to have an hour every day rather than 2 hours every other day, because I spent all this energy trying to remember where I was. And if,
yeah.
if you can keep your thread going, that's half the battle. Another thing I did that really was life-saving, and I don't know if this is possible for you, but couple times a year I would go to a writer's retreat. There's one in Lake Forest, Illinois called the Ragdale Foundation, and somebody makes your dinner and you just have a room, and I would put my head down, and for 2 weeks I would just write. And I think the beauty of being in your situation is that when you do have time, I'm guessing that you use it pretty well, and that you just do it, and you're not sort of checking your email and, you know, dusting the shelves. And, you know, I look back at that time, and I accomplished so much in what time I had, and I was fueled by rage. And I think I wrote all of those books really just on the energy of rage. And now I don't have that anymore. And so I think the books have a very different quality, and I sort of miss that febrile sense of just sort of teetering on the edge all the time. But all that to say, there is no balance. And, you know, the children, are they in school yet?
One is.
Uh-huh. I mean, public schools is just a wonderful institution. and you know, there's a great line in a poem by Marianne Baruch. She talks about how the bus comes along, the doors open, and then it was as if the child had never existed. Just for the moment, you know, because yeah. then you can go off and do your work, and then they come back, and everything is beautiful. But it's not easy.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for
good
your
luck.
Good luck. Thanks very much for calling. Yeah, I've talked to Jennifer Cheverini about
yes.
that, and she
the quilting books,
and she has another one out. In fact, we'll be talking with her around the end of April, sometime in there, and she have little ones. I believe, as I recall, she would get up at 5 or something, and right between 5 and 6:30 or something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's how she dealt with the children part of it.
Yes, and she doesn't look a day over 18 and a half. She always looks fresh and rosy, so she clearly has genetics on her side.
She clearly has. Ruth and Sean, oh, it's your turn. Hi, Ruth.
Oh, hello. See, this is an opportunity to talk to someone who's a writer, a publishing writer, but I'm a writer, but I don't publish, so I wanted to say, what's this? I've been keeping a daily journal, a diary, in the days of they were called diaries, since 1938.
Oh, my goodness.
When my mother got me started on it.
Oh, and, that's wonderful.
And she was an immigrant, so writing was it, you know. He corresponds, but I've been doing this. So I have this trunk full of decades, 70 journals or diaries, and as I go through them, and I do write, have a compulsion to write every single night.
Mm-hmm.
I fill that page. My mother gave me those diaries at Christmas time for as long as she was living, and my oldest daughter followed up now and continues to provide me with this.
Oh.
And so what good are they?
What good are they?
Yeah.
Well, that's a really interesting question. Does the writing give you satisfaction?
Well, it certainly puts me back to that moment and
yes.
that day and everything. I record the emotionals and describe. It isn't just notes, you know. I just write what's happening, an event, the event, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the emotions that go with it.
Uh-huh. I mean, it sounds like a kind of wonderful prayer at the end of the day. And also, when you go back and read things from years past, does it spark your memory? I mean, I would wager that perhaps you might have a better memory than some people in your age bracket who haven't done such a thing.
Well, I record every single one of my children's births and beyond, day by day.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And I bet they will,
yeah.
At some point, they will enjoy them, if they haven't already.
And my daughter gives me a new book every year, and she puts her message in front of it, sometimes pictures. Uh-huh.
I think that's a lovely family document.
My wife's grandmother did something very similar to what you're doing, Ruth, and I don't recall how many diaries there are, but they're really treasured. She's passed on now. I think she was about 92 when she died, and she kept a record from the time she was in her teens. So daily, every day.
Mm-hmm.
For her entire life, and it's a real treasure for the family.
Yeah, when my father died, I came upon his notebooks, and I was so excited, and I opened them, and you know, April 6th, 50 degrees, work. April 7th, 51 degrees. I wanted more.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I know in the case of my wife's grandmother, if you wanted to know, one of the things that was in every day during the season was if you wanted to know what the Chicago Cubs did.
Oh, boy.
That was in every single... That was always mentioned.
I think it's a great thing, Ruth, if you're still online. And I
yes,
think
I
don't think it's a useless thing to do at all. I think it's great for you. It's great for your family. And they're lucky.
And keep it up.
Okay. I'm up to my 86th year now. So.
Oh, boy.
At any rate, I want to know if there's value here or what.
Oh,
well,
there's value.
Yeah.
Lots of value. And thank you very much for calling. And John and Gordon, we'll give you a chance now. John, hello.
Hello, Larry. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Sun's shining up here. It's just absolutely gorgeous. I got back from my walk, and then I hear Jane Hamilton is on, and I'm just rather awed. Jane, God bless you. The Book of Ruth, it was one of my most fantastic reading experiences.
Thank you.
And the ending, my Lord, it almost tore my heart out.
Oh, dear.
And then the map of the world, holy cow. And have you heard about The Shack?
The Shack.
It's a recent book. Darn it, I have it out of my reach right now. I can't remember the name of the author at the moment. But it is about a child that is abducted,
mm-hmm.
a little four-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm.
And it then proceeds into this fellow, the father, Mac, who has been in a dark place for a long, long time, and he opens his mailbox on a rainy day and hears a letter from God, and he goes back to the cabin back in the woods where the child had been murdered, apparently. And I mean, it is just, and then, and anyway, that it goes from there, and it is a remarkable book, but it has some echoes of your book.
Goodness, goodness! Now you sound like you're either a professor or a minister, because of your diction. You have, or you could be a public radio host.
Bless you! I am a reader and a listener. That's what I am.
Oh.
And I'm a retired educator, is what I am. But uh-huh. You know, not anyway.
I just finished that book myself a couple of weeks ago.
Wow!
I'm trying to remember the author's name, and I can't.
Well, I'll check it out.
Tears run down your cheeks.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I think, and that book, that particular book has sold a lot of copies. I think they had something like 5 million copies in print or something. The book, The Shack.
The Shack. That's quite a few.
That's
We won't share our food stamps with that author.
No. Well, I have to say the characters in your book, I wasn't a big fan of your characters. I personally didn't like them.
Well, I think no prisoners are taken in the book.
Yeah.
I mean, there's equal opportunity savaging of them. It's true.
but it's a lot of fun to read. And I guess this whole business of writing a book without really wanting to go through the process of learning it was of learning how to write a book was, I don't know, kind of sad in a way, disappointing. It goes back to what you were talking about earlier, I guess, with your ship, the people on the cruise ship.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I think also perhaps one of the aspects of the book is that no matter how you do your writing, you end up kind of brutalizing people close to you.
Yeah.
But that, in fact, is part of the process.
Yeah, it is. Well, I tell you, you have some sessions coming up where you're going to be on tour. You'll be at Barnes & Noble in Brookfield this Friday.
Right.
This Friday, you'll be there at 7 p.m., if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're at Borders Books in Madison on the very next day, on the 11th, this Saturday, at 1 p.m., and that's Borders on University Avenue. Do you enjoy those?
I think, let's see. I thought it was at 4, but I'll have to check that out.
Ah.
Well, it won't be at 1 if I'm not there, so I'll have to check that.
Oh, maybe it is 4.
Who knows?
Oh, okay. Well,
we shall see.
Well, thank you so much, and I think this worked better than the Garden Talk half hour.
Thank you, Larry.
It's a wonderful read, and I appreciate it. And I'll look forward to your next book. Have you got something on board?
Yeah, I'm working on the next thing, but as always, I don't know if it'll work out. There's that sinking feeling.
Thanks, Jane. Jane Hamilton, our guest today, author of many books, including her latest. Give it a read. It is really a lot of fun. And if you listen to public radio, there's some little there's a little side story there about public radio in it. It's called Laura Ryder's Masterpiece. Jane Hamilton, the author, Laura Ryder's Masterpiece. It's published by Grand Central, and I had a lot of fun reading it. Enjoyed it very much. And I tell you what, I always enjoy talking with our next guest as well. He's been with us a number of times. Dr. Dick Niles, practicing dermatologist, will be with us to talk about all things dermatological here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.